Chapter 44. Latham, Jotterdam, Latham. To Thalen's relief, when he approached Chute Irinia with his question about the water in Oromondo, she was willing, even eager, to share her expertise and work with him again.
I think you're right, Thalen, that the only thing that would harm crops, animals and humans would be bad water. But what would cause such a taint and spread it so widely?
Some people assume magic, said Thalen.
Claiming magic just means they don't understand it, sniffed Irinia. Let's go into the laboratory. Maybe looking at my collections will spark some ideas, or perhaps, her eyes lit up, we'll run some experiments.
Poison water, drink it, and see if we get sick? Thalen asked with a smile.
No, Lackwit. But we could add substances to water and use it to water plants, or pour some in Rector Miki's fishbowls.
Thalen chuckled at Irinia's conspiratorial glee.
So, late at night for a week, when other students weren't using the lab, Tutor Irinia and he would mix concoctions and pour them over carefully labelled grass samples. In the case of lye, the grass wilted so immediately that no one could miss the effect. And with other substances, the stalks still stood upright like little soldiers.
We're going about this wrong, Irinia concluded after another long night. Do you know when the blight started, or if they have been getting worse?
I don't know, Thalen admitted, but I could try to find out.
Irinia nodded, and she looked around the lab with narrowed eyes.
Moreover, a lot of things we've tried, I now realize, were just a waste of time. Lemons don't grow there, do they? And besides, no one is squeezing them in the streams all over the whole country. What does grow there? Some type of noxious berry?
I've never read about the Oro crops or flora. Thalen rubbed his tired eyes. It's famous for its mining of jewels and ores.
Right, of course, agreed Irinia.
She continued thinking out loud.
Jewels don't dissolve in water, but in volcanic rock one might also find other metals.
She ran across the lab to a drawer and pulled it open, revealing rock samples, each with a white paper tag.
Ah-ha! I have nothing from Oromondo, but I do have specimens from the Green Isles. The isles are volcanic too, though they've been dormant for centuries.
Do you want to try these? He asked. How do you get rocks to dissolve in water?
You'd need to chip them or drill them as you would if you were mining, she said almost dreamily. But you also want to control the concentration and how many times you water the grass samples.
She came out of her thoughts and looked up.
Go away, Thalen.
You look exhausted. You go back to your studying with Granelton. Now, I'm intrigued with this question. I'll pursue this on my own. But find out whatever you can about the timeline of the plagues.
It took Thalen days to figure out how to research this timeline, but ultimately, trade amongst the nations, a tally provided sufficient information about when Oromondo began importing foodstuffs in quantity and how these shipments had grown steadily over the past 7 decades. In his next tutorial session with Granelton, Thalen relayed that Irinia was exploring whether Oro mining might explain the tainted water.
The deeper you mine into the volcanic mountains, the more you risk running into seams of metallic ores. Irinia thinks that these might be toxins.
Granelton leaned forward eagerly.
So, in their desire for the wealth of their gems and precious metals, the Oros might be poisoning their own water supply?
That's what we suspect.
How? Interesting! But why would the Oros themselves not have figured this out?
Maybe because it's been happening slowly and Don't people overlook what they don't want to see?
Thalen shifted uncomfortably, recalling Gusti's warning about the match between himself and Dagana.
After all, the Oro's economy is built around their mining.
Granilton took off his spectacles and wiped them.
So intriguing. Immediate gain leading to long-term decline. I don't suppose there would be any way of convincing the Oros to halt their mining.
How? Said Thalen, raising his hands in a gesture of hopelessness. At the moment we can't prove a thing.
Young man, this also links up with a theory of mine I'm contemplating writing up someday. Often a country's strength also becomes its undoing. Take the Free States. We are so proud of our electoral system, but having a sizable assembly of electors means the assembly is often torn by rival interests, and everyone must compromise and persuade until the geese grow fat. We dither, and no one can act decisively. Or take Weirendale, which relies too much on its queen. Without her, the realm flounders.
Several weeks later, when the Assembly of Electors of the Free States invited Granilton to another emergency session, he asked Thalen to accompany him to Jutterdam. The tutor had aged in the years since Thalen began studying with him. His back had taken on a definite hunch, and his eyes looked filmy, so he genuinely needed a strong arm to lean on and someone to carry his case and books. Granilton had always had few readers, and Thalen was currently the one who had studied with him the longest. Yet from the steady stream of lecturing and quizzing Granilton peppered him with throughout the journey, Thalen suspected that his tutor also wanted his company so he could cram in every last drop of his knowledge. His hectoring carried an urgency that Thalen found distressing. Under other circumstances, Thalen would have relished the journey. His long love affair with Dagana had ended with bruised feelings on both sides, and he found it refreshing to get away from campus. The long roads cart took them through parts of the Free States that Thalen had never seen before, but Granilton's dark mood made enjoyment impossible. He repeatedly made comments on the order of, "Look at that peaceful picture of peasants sowing, young man. Imprint it in your memory. Alas, this field will never be so bucolic again." Every vista thus took on an aura of melancholy and fear. Finding this atmosphere upsetting, Thalen cast around for something that might sidetrack his tutor's bleak mood.
"Sir, see with our forearms close together? See that my skin is darker than yours?"
What? Said Granilton, startled by the topic. "All right, I suppose, now that you mention it."
"What accounts for the different skin shades amongst people?"
Granilton frowned.
"I don't know. You brought up the subject."
"I think it might have something to do with being in the sun. Hildur often works outside, and his skin is darker. But what actually confounds me is that we all see these differences, but we don't actually notice them, or at least not the way we pay attention to hair color."
He'd managed to capture Granilton's attention.
"Skin color is a meaningless variation. It doesn't register because our culture doesn't stress it. We can't notice everything, so we pay attention to what society tells us is important. We all know, for instance, that hair colour indicates country of origin and traditional social standing, so we notice."
"An Aemon will be a better place when everyone's hair is brown," Thalen opined.
"Will it?" Granilton mused. "Or will people just settle on other marks of difference, other reasons to hate one another?"
When they approached Jutterdam, the largest city in the Free States, the famous walled city on the sea, they crossed the Jutta River at King's Bridge. Thalen had only a few glimpses of streets and buildings. He noted that, like Sutterdam, the skyline was dotted with churches built to all the spirits, before Granelton hustled him straight to the assembly. They met in a small and overheated amphitheatre in which rows of participants seated on cushioned benches looked down on a stage area that held an assortment of tables, chairs, maps and high-ranking functionaries. Each of the Free States, Vigat, Figat, Jigat and Wigat, had sent a team of 7 electors, and other notables had volunteered to testify. The conversation swung back and forth between disbelief, fear and bravado in the loud and contentious debates.
"She would sell her country for a handful of deer scat," said Granelton, during a woman's long lament about how a war would be bad for business.
"Tudor, I beg you to keep your voice down,"
Phelan whispered, shrinking smaller in his seat. The next man who moved to the front argued that the protectors would turn back when they reached the causeway because it was impossible to cross.
"That man makes a carrot look smart," his venerable teacher said at full volume. "Does he think that Oros have marched all that way just to retreat?"
Phelan pulled at his sleeve. "Tudor, please. They have slated you to speak tomorrow. Perhaps you should sit quietly and not make any enemies. I'm taking notes so you can rebut..."
"Shh!" Someone shushed the pair from the Scalarium.
"I tell you, we have the situation in hand,"
said a different man in a military uniform.
"We have placed a detachment at the causeway. More importantly, we have taken the precaution of obtaining, all the way from Agfador, mind you, the very latest advance in military technology."
The officer crossed over to a table where something bulky lay beneath a canvas cloth.
"Behold, the fabled repeating crossbow. Where before precious time elapsed while the archer knocked, now he can shoot up to 8 quarrels at a time. And they all fly with crossbow strength, sufficient to penetrate Oro armor. With this weapon, we can defend against any invading force."
The amphitheatre broke into delighted applause. People in the front pounded the officer's back while others passed the sample around. Granelton alone wore a pronounced scowl. He shook Thalen's calming hand off and stood up, interrupting the speaker.
"Do you have all of these weapons in hand?"
someone shouted.
"You are out of order, Granelton!"
But other voices called out, "Let him speak!"
"Doldrums delayed the shipment, but we allowed for this. We expect them any day now."
"Will you have time for the men to train with them?"
Granelton pressed.
"From this sample, we know the mechanism is simple and easy to use."
Granelton's skepticism coloured his voice.
"How many did you order?"
1,000, said the officer with a wide flourish of his hands. The room burst into more applause.
A man called out, "Will those Oros be surprised?" Another commented, "Free States ingenuity will win out every time.
To our glorious victory."
"Putting the crossbows aside," said Granelton, "have you sent a company to blockade the Causeway of Stones?"
"We have a squad of archers stationed there, and they may turn the Oros back. However, if the Oros persevere, we don't intend the bridge to serve as the site of our decisive battle. We have considered our position with these weapons in mind," he said, gesturing towards the bow. "Because the enemy will be strung out on the causeway, we wouldn't get full advantage from our rain of death. We want the enemy massed before us in a field so we can mow them down all at once. Also, these bows tend to scatter their shot, which is why we don't want these expensive custom-made quarrels being wasted in the sea. And when you fixate on the causeway, Granelton, you leave out of consideration our cavalry, which must be given an equal chance. As you can see, we have taken many other factors into consideration."
"Other factors?"
The old scholar's voice rose through the 4 short syllables.
Master, calm yourself.
The military officer smiled with condescension.
We are experienced in military matters, while all your notions come from books.
Wait, sit down and shut up, you imbecile! You ill-taught, illogical... illiterate!
Spittle gathered in the corners of Granulton's mouth.
You wouldn't listen to me years ago about blocking off the causeway. You wouldn't listen to me about hiring mercenaries or sending emissaries to our allies. Now it is too late for all such measures. We have lost our chance to forestall an invasion. Lost it due to your pride, dithering and misjudgment. All we can do today is mitigate the damage.
The room fell silent as Granulton's fury infected some of the participants with doubts. A woman shouted out,
I will withdraw Wigat's forces to protect Wigat.
And Figat should protect our border,
yelled a heavyset man. Granulton roared,
No, no, no! You will each want to circle your armies to protect your own homes. That way lies madness. Our only hope is to join together all our forces to meet the Oro army as a combined force. With some luck, we can inflict serious damage upon the invaders.
A Jigat elector jumped to his feet.
But who would command a joint force? Jigat has the most distinguished military force. That may be true, but Vigat will be the side of the attack,
countered a man in uniform.
Vigat's generals should be in command. To them should go the glory.
Glory? You want glory?
Granulton's raised bony fist actually shook with anger.
Finally, I understand. You dither on the causeway because totally forestalling an invasion would not provide enough glory. You think that you will decimate the Oro army with your new toy and win glory. Instead of thinking about glory, you should have been thinking of the welfare of your countrymen. Oh, you fools!
Thalen's teacher held his head in his hands. The room grew quiet. When Granulton spoke again, his voice was soft and despairing.
Appoint a commander, any commander, post haste, and start making all preparations. We may not be ready for war, but war is upon us. Every second you posture and argue costs more Free States' lives. I, for one, will not sit here discussing nonsense a moment longer.
He hustled Thalen out of the hall. Thalen heard the shouting immediately recommence as they left and hired a coach for Latham. Thalen suffered a pang that they didn't even get to spend the night or eat a meal, but his tutor could brook no delay. At each stop, he sent Thalen running to purchase the latest broadsheet and muttered angrily when he discovered it was a week stale. They grabbed cold food when the coachman changed horses. They arrived in the dark of night, weary from hours of bouncing, but Tutor Granulton had Thalen take him straight to the rector. Thalen waited outside the door, hearing Granulton's voice yelling at her. Thalen reread the same sentences from Oromondo Battle Tactics while time dragged by slowly. When the rector opened the door after this consultation, her eyes looked puffy and her cheeks moist. But she put on her jolly smile for Thalen and sent him to fetch several other tutors, servants, and even Quinneth. When he completed those duties, he escorted Granulton back to his lodgings, holding him up by the elbow. The aged man collapsed on the edge of his bed while Thalen set his travelling case down and unlatched it.
Would you like me to pull off your boots for you, sir?
Granulton waved him away.
That will do. Get some rest, young man.
The rector will call a scholarium meet in the morn on the morrow.
He reached for a heavy volume on a shelf.
For bedtime reading, you might take a glance at this.
The book cover he handed Thalen read, Surviving a Siege or Sack? He saw Thalen's face after he read the title and reconsidered.
No, give it back here. What was I thinking of? He mumbled. That is not for tonight. It is so late. No reading tonight.
In the morning, all the students, tutors, and staff crowded into the Scholarium lecture hall after fast break. Rector Miki wore a cheery gown of bright yellow and orange, and she had stuck a piece of orange coral in a headpiece at a rakish angle. Just seeing her bobbing and smiling made everyone feel a little less apprehensive. She mounted the podium and looked out over the throng.
My darling scholars, you are so precious. You are more precious than 10 walrus skeletons.
She spoke with sincerity and was slightly taken aback by the laughter that rippled through the hall. Then she chuckled and purposely topped herself.
Or even an intact manatee specimen.
After the slightly forced laughter died down, she continued with more gravity.
You have all heard that we expect the Oro army to invade sometime in the next moon. Tutor Granolton predicts that the first blow will fall in Viget, near Sutterdam, because of its proximity to Melodrin. So, for only the second time in its history, the first time being the grip epidemic 172 years ago, I have the singularly unhappy duty of closing the Scholarium.
A buzz of conversation overwhelmed the crowd. The rector had to hold up her hands for silence.
Now, no cause for immediate panic. Most of you will want to join your families or lend your strength to the Free States Army. I learned for the first time yesterday that many of you have long been practicing weaponry without my knowledge or aid. For that, I beg your forgiveness.
Thalen badly wanted a world where the rector could experiment on her fish eggs in undisturbed peace. Her apology made his eyes mist over.
But before you disperse, readers, tutors, staff, one thing here is more precious even than you. The library of humility. Hundreds of scholars over hundreds of years have gathered books from all over the world. Our collection holds volumes available nowhere else in Anaemon. Tutor Granolton and I believe that the library faces particular peril. Yes, the barrier of Clear Lake partially protects us, and the Oros would find it hard to march here in force. But any enemy soldiers who do venture this far inland would take particular offense from our books, for they record the history of many cultures and religions, and thus their magi would rule these volumes blasphemous. How any person could set a book aflame, I do not pretend to understand.
She sighed.
But I have been convinced that sacking and burning the library would be the highest priority of any Oros who came here. And if the books are burned, we lose the hard-fought knowledge and ignorance of generations. So, our duty is clear. We must save the Library of Humility. But how? Tutor Irinia has devised a brilliant plan. She knows of a series of limestone caves in the hills less than 2 leagues from Latham that are partially hidden and not easily reachable. They might escape Oro notice completely. If we parcel the books out in multiple places, at least they cannot fall from one tinder strike. Yet to shift 10,000 books would be a mammoth undertaking. Tutor Karosh has started to calculate how many cartloads, how many horses, how many ladders, and so on. I must tell you, his calculations make me dizzy. Here she got them to laugh again. Many of you impatiently desire to hurry home to your loved ones. I understand. No one will blame you if you leave this forenoon. Still, I beg of you, stay 2 weeks and help us hide the books. Then, should we all perish, we will have ensured that knowledge remains safe for the next generation, which we hope will be blessed to live out its days in peace. Gwyneth jumped to his feet, shouting and raising his fist aloft. The books! The books! We must save the books! Tutor Karosh took up the roar, as did the porter, Hilidor. All the students and staff in the hall joined in. The books! The books! We must save the books! The rafters shook. Thalen shouted too, because he agreed with the plan. At the same time, a small part of his mind recalled motivation of the populace, techniques and recommendations, which Granelton had assigned him a year ago. He admired how well the rector, through jokes and apologies, had led up to a request, and how she had seeded the audience with enthusiastic advocates. The community dispersed for a hearty meal in the refectory and then changed into clothing suitable for labouring. They started shifting the books that day. Villagers came to help. Carts, wheelbarrows, buckets, rucksacks, cases, trunks, anything that would hold more than arms were pressed into service. At first they took care to preserve the book's order, but that soon went by the wayside. The most physically taxing part of the mammoth task loomed at the cave end. The caves opened some paces above ground level, reachable only by ladder. Initially, the stronger men, such as Thalen, carried the volumes up the ladders by rucksack. When that proved much too slow, Thalen conferred with the tutor of engineering. Together, they hooked up a pulley system. Buoyed by a fine spirit of camaraderie, the Scalarium and Latham communities worked dusty, arduous days. When the caves would hold not one more, leaving but a few hundred straggling volumes that had fallen during transport, the rector proclaimed the battle over and dismissed her troops. The volunteers tried hard to erase the signs of their access to the caves. A good rainstorm would complete the job. In the morn, Thalen packed his own belongings and embraced his friends. Dagana had already left, which saved him both from worrying about her and from an awkward farewell. Many readers said they would follow his footsteps back to Vigat, if not immediately, then after a stop at their family homes. Everyone put on a cheery face and vowed to meet back at the Scalarium when the war is over. Thalen stopped by the rector's chamber to say goodbye. The door stood open, and he discovered Tutor Granelton already there in the throes of a vehement argument. His tutor insisted that all the women and older girls of the Scalarium staff and the town of Latham flee to the hills and forests. The rector protested that she could not abandon her post.
Miki, don't be an arrogant idiot. I know the depredations of these soldiers. My logic
is flawless. One, you are a young and beautiful woman, a woman who would be their prey. Two, you have many more years of scholarship and teaching ahead of you. Three, I, on the other hand, stand here as naught but a shriveled old man. All they can do is kill me. I insist that you set an example for the others and leave tomorrow. They will need your leadership and good humour to buoy them in their hideouts.
Thalen had read that war led to rape and the brutalization of civilians, though the concept of such brutality disturbing the peace of the Scalarium struck him as an implausible nightmare. Still, Thalen joined Granelton in his entreaties, and together they won the rector over. Tutor Irinia came rushing down the stairs from her own office and burst into their discussion.
"I thought I heard your voice," she said to Thalen. "Can I borrow him for a minute?" she asked her colleagues.
"As long as you bring him right back," said Granelton. "Now, Rector."
"We've got to go over to the laboratory," Irinia said to Thalen urgently. "Tutor, I have to catch the cart to the ferry. I really don't think I have time."
"Then we'll run,"
said Irinia firmly, and she set across the grass at an awkward lope, bony elbows pumping, holding up her long skirt, her pinned-up hair falling down. Thalen had no choice but to follow her. Panting, they burst into the laboratory, where his tutor led him to a pan placed on a table. Thalen started to say what's so important, but the words died on his lips, because he saw the pan's contents. 5 small, dead fish.
"These are fathead minnows," Irinia explained in a rush. "I was trying different concentrations of solutions on them. During the book shifting, I fed them late at night and didn't pay any real attention to them. And this morning I saw they had all died."
Not only had the fish died, but they showed a variety of ill effects. One had a big tumour on its belly, another had lost most of its scales, the eyes of a third had gone cloudy. Irinia grabbed Thalen's shoulders with both hands.
"You've got to run now. But if either of us should perish in the upcoming invasion, at least the other one knows for certain. The Auros have poisoned their own water through their mining."
She squeezed him with her long fingers.
"Now go!"
Thalen rushed back to Scholar's house, where Granelton was watching for him impatiently.
"Young man, come upstairs with me."
They climbed the stairs to his office, the tired elder leaning on his reader. In his office, Granelton remarked,
"Look round."
Thalen's sensitized eyes saw the problem. All the tutor's personal chambers still held hundreds of their own books.
"What can we do?" Thalen asked hopelessly.
"There is naught to be done," sighed Granelton. "Let us hope that walking through Scholar's House and setting each separate study alight is too much of a bother for any Oro soldiers. But just in case..."
The tutor quickly grabbed a book here, one there, one off his shelf and one off his chair.
"Could you find room for these? I judge they are the most precious and the most useful to you. Oh, and this one, please. Take them, please. Save them."
Thalen could hardly refuse. He stuffed them in his rucksack, though they doubled its weight. He held out his hand, trying to think of something comforting to say.
"Farewell, Tutor Granelton. You provided the assembly with your wisest advice. You and the others saved the library. You've given the local women prudent counsel. You can be proud of these notable accomplishments."
The elderly scholar shook his hand and then pulled him into an awkward embrace.
"I have not done half enough with my life. There were treatises I should have written."
He struck his own forehead with his fingertips.
"What knowledge will perish when I die? How could I have thought I had more time? How could I have been so lazy and slow? Thalen, keep thyself safe. My only son died some years ago, you know."
He pointed at Thalen's chest.
"You
have been my most promising pupil. You are my legacy."
Thalen left the room quickly before he became emotional. As he ran to catch the last coach to Clear Lake, he realized that this was the sole time Granelton had embraced him, complimented him, or called him by name.